This is the Mouths of the South podcast.
You shut your mouth when you're talking to me.
The official Dirty South Soccer podcast.
Do you understand the words that are coming out of my mouth?
Talking all things Atlanta United FC.
Don't nobody understand the words that are coming out of your mouth, man.
We are
the Mouths of the South.
The South got something to say. That's all I got to say.
What's up, Atlanta? This is the Mazda South podcast brought to you by Dirty South Soccer in the palatial 680 The Fan studio in the Battery, Atlanta, in Cobb County, where Josh Bagriansky and Sam Franco have joined me. And now moving forward, we're going to be missing Kelly and Jay. They have decided to part ways with the podcast amicably. There's no hard feelings or anything like that. And they are actually going to be doing their own podcast. Like a pre and post game thing last Saturday was at Rocky Mountain Pizza. I'm going to be part of the Home Before Dark network of podcast shows. So make sure you check them out whenever you can, whenever you're available. Home Before Dark, a great fun podcast if you got some time during the week. I think they usually record Monday nights. No, Tuesday. But they go live on YouTube and fun stuff. And it really, I think, starts a conversation. I was thinking about this the other day, how many podcasts. It stemmed from a joke that someone made about how many podcasts, how much content we have out there, and how long ago was it that we didn't have any content?
Yeah.
And we really were struggling to find anything or anyone to talk about Atlanta United and how much stuff we have now and how, again, the joke was something about you get a podcast and you get a podcast and you get a podcast and people was started talking about how I'm going to start a podcast. I think we had one tentatively named Park Life, all about Michael Parker's and what he does off the field.
They were going to use that song Park Life by The Blur.
It's just funny how we went from, not that I'm like bashing anyone from complaint because I know it's a joke, but it's just funny how we went from zero content at all to begging the radio stations to talk about it. Now they're talking about it. Now we can't get enough content. We have 30 million podcasts and blogs and
the 30 million
and YouTube stuff and all sorts of things. I mean, you can't really go anywhere anymore without we're running into someone who has some kind of Atlanta United media outlet of some kind. But anyways, that's what they'll be doing. Nothing but the best for them. It was fun to have them on while they were here, and I'm glad that they've branched out and they're starting to do their own thing. For the foreseeable future, it's just going to be the three of us. As you see him on the screen, we got a new webcam. Hopefully it's nice and clear. Hopefully you can hear us better than you could when it was just my laptop. Guys, 2-0 win over LA Galaxy on Saturday. How was it? How was the feeling getting the best of Zlatan in this one?
It was awesome. And I think the main thing is, you know, by being able to control every aspect of that game, and for the second straight game, Atlanta United, a team that just dominated on defense – I mean, this is a case where Zlatan couldn't do anything, and it really had nothing to do with how you marked or defended Zlatan. It had everything to do with taking everyone else out of the game. Yeah. And a guy like Zlatan, a pure number nine, you know, he's not going to be able to be effective if nobody else around him can do anything.
And I think something we've talked about a lot is that Tata Martino's MO is not so much preparing for an individual player, it's if his team plays the way they want, then you nullify that player in attack. So you saw Atlanta United controlling the game virtually for the entire 90 minutes. So it's simple. The Galaxy are not able to get onto the ball in good positions because Atlanta United are controlling the game, and therefore Zlatan is not getting service. So this was not about so much the individual, although we saw a great performance from the back three, Parkhurst, McCann, and Gonzalez Pires, but it wasn't so much them shutting down Kamara and Zlatan with the individual battles. It was more so Atlanta United controlling the flow of the game, and those guys, as a result, were unable to get on the ball in dangerous areas.
You mentioned, at least on the Slack channel, I don't know if you actually tweeted anything out, but how the first 45 minutes were more or less a clinic from the Atlanta United side. For me, it was the first 30 minutes where it seemed that everything was going Atlanta United's way, to the point where I think I noted at some point, in the 30th minute, LA Galaxy finally had their first real spell of possession. They had touched the ball, obviously, but they didn't really get a good group of passes together, a nice string of passes together until about the 30th minute where they actually found a chance to control the tempo, to kind of pass it around, you know, take the gas off or take the foot off the gas a little bit, if you will. It wasn't until that point where I got scared because you had all these chances going Atlanta's way that weren't converted. You missed on a few opportunities. that you could have – honestly, this game should have ended in the first 30 minutes, in my opinion. You could it was that good in the first 30 minutes that this game could have been over before halftime. And it wasn't. That scared me going into the second half.
Sure, and that's something that we've seen work in our favor at home, where teams have come to Atlanta, failed to finish, then we capitalize. So I certainly got that feeling as well, Eric, that you know, you're thinking, oh, we should be up 2-0, 3-0. But I would say the first – you mentioned the first 30 minutes. That is the most solid I think I've seen us play back to front really since the franchise has started playing games. I mean, strong in possession, very dangerous in the last third, completely dominant through the center of the midfield, virtually untested in that, but dealing with it well when the ball gets into those areas. It was an absolute clinic. And I know we'll talk a little bit about Ezekiel Barco later, but I thought he was the key to that. Regardless, I think you're seeing an Atlanta United team, again, just solid from back to front in ways that we have not seen before. It's always been a dangerous team. It's always been a team that can score goals. We've seen good patches and bad patches defensively. But I think over the last month or so, we've started to see a consistency and solidity about this side that we have not seen yet. And certainly, when you think about that LA could have been 4 or 5 goals, if simply the finishing comes, and the finishing will come, it's scary to think about what this team can do going forward.
Well, it's been so refreshing watching this team become such a good defensive team, but at the same time, it's like with the finishing, it's like I know you're saying it's going to come, but so I'm guessing that means you're not really worried about that because Atlanta United has had chance after chance after chance in a few games now, and it seems like those finishes – or the finishing just isn't happening. And even Joseph's goal in this game was just, you know, a complete shambles at what like Alex was doing.
I tend to believe, and, you know, most people I kind of on the analytical side of things would agree that eventually you kind of regress or progress to the mean. So I do think we'll see the finishing boots coming out from Atlanta United in the next few weeks. When that happens, considering the types of chances and the quality of chances being created, It's hard to imagine. I mean, I'm looking at this game with Montreal coming up this weekend, and I'm thinking 3-4 goals should be no problem. I mean, when you consider we went on the road to play an LA Galaxy team, and Eric, you mentioned this before we went on. I mean, there were a lot of things going against Atlanta. You're playing on the West Coast, obviously, so your clock is off. You've got Barco. You're trying to integrate in his first start. Obviously, this Zlatan effect and all that, and you go there and just dominate them. I mean, in such a comfortable, clinical manner. And like we said, things, I think, can only get better, which is really the great part about this.
I do like what Steven just said on the Facebook page. He goes, man, sometimes ball just smashes that bar multiple times. It's like, oh, man, some of the chances that we've had.
It did start to feel, oh, this is going to be one of those nights where, you know, because I remember thinking to myself, you know what, if LA gets a late goal here and comes out with a point, I'm still going to be very positive about the performance. Except the fact, to me at least, that some of those chances that did hit the bar are going to go in next time. I thought the performance was what really had me excited, despite the scoreline was kind of the only thing that didn't indicate just how dominant Atlanta United were.
The only facet of the game that I thought Atlanta United was not dominant in was obviously the finishing.
Yeah.
Because, again, you created – and it wasn't that – honestly, I don't think that Atlanta United, the attacking players, are bad finishers. It's just that things were just a little bit, and this might be just a casual, or yeah, I guess an effect of playing on the road. The crosses were just a little bit off. Mm-hmm. The passes were just a little bit off. The contact on those passes to try to get a shot off was just a little bit off. It was little things that just didn't connect in that final third, in those moments where you could have put this game away, that were just a little bit off. And it wasn't really anyone's fault. I mean, Gressel, we've seen time again putting good crosses. For whatever reason, that night just wasn't on. Martinez, multiple chances in front of goal. For whatever reason, just wasn't on. You had the right before Martinez actually gets the goal, the three off the crossbar or off the...
Yeah, Miggy hits the bar. Gressel hits the bar soon after. And I think Joseph had just hit the post a couple minutes earlier on the penalty kick. So, I mean, obviously, it's just a barrage of shots.
It just seemed, and like you said, it seemed like one of those nights where just things might not be super easy for Atlanta United on the attacking end. Now, the positive in all of that, and it's not that that's a negative, it's just something they've had to fight through, is that they did fight through it. And they did do it on the road, where for some reason in MLS, it's you know... playing at home and playing away is night and day for some of these teams.
Well, it's nice to see the team beating adversity, and that's something that we didn't see a whole lot last season. Like when things would start to fall apart, they really started to fall apart, as opposed to over the past few games. And it looked bad in the Houston game, but that at this point is just an outlier.
The way I saw this is that if LA Galaxy had found a way to score either in that first half or early in the second. I had no problem believing that Atlanta United could mm-hmm. still pull out a win with how well they were playing.
It is a different feeling on the road now, and I think it all has to do with that Minnesota match where we didn't play particularly well, but we all came here on the podcast the following week, and most of the fans as well felt this way, and I'm sure the players felt this way as too. Just to come out with the 3 points on a road match where you're really fighting against adversity in ways that you haven't before makes winning in L.A. a piece of cake. You know, I mean, and I really think that this confidence and solidity we're seeing all stems from that Minnesota match, because this is the first time that I do watch Atlanta United play and you kind of get that feeling, like you said, oh, it's going to be one of those nights, still 1-0 in the 70, 75th minute. When you watch the play, it felt like I, as a fan, was the only one who felt – the fans felt that way, but the players looked composed,
right.
disciplined.
Yeah, exactly. Yep.
And that's a new – that's
I was the only one freaking
look.
Out.
Yeah, exactly.
I was the only one freaking out.
We should be. You know, we should be the ones freaking out in those situations, but that's an easy feeling to creep into the players' minds. Oh, we should be up 2-3 goals. Now we have to sit back and defend here on the road. The last 10, 15 minutes, you saw Atlanta United soak up the pressure brilliantly and actually ice it with a second goal in stoppage time. So, again, it's – aside from the results, just the way the results are coming, it's really got me excited. I mean, and really, like I wasn't last season about this team. In that we can, like you said, Sam, we can win games when things are tough now.
Yeah.
And
last season it was only offense. Like,
exactly.
You felt like the defense was lacking, and I mean it's mostly the same players. I mean, you've added a Franco Escobar who hasn't played recently mm-hmm. because of injury. But, you know, transitioning.
It's the same base, defensive base, yeah.
But transitioning to the 3-5-2 has just allowed you to play those three, you know, center backs, and you have your wing backs out wide, and guys, a guy like Garza, a guy like Gressel. Gressel's not the best defender in the world, but he's effective at it enough, and Garza is such a consummate professional. He's such a wily veteran that he knows what to do there.
Let me ask you guys this, because obviously defense looks better than it's ever looked before. Do you think it's because of the switch to the three-back, or do you think it's more so these guys just getting used to playing with one another back there?
What did I say earlier?
Because I go back and forth.
I go back and forth on this.
Like every hour, I go back and forth.
Well,
I think
personally that the 3-5-2 allows, and this is going to lend into one of the worst takes I've ever heard about Atlanta United, that they don't have a midfield right now. It's like, what are you talking about? I mean, you look at the way that Larenowicz, Nagby, and Almiron, and I know Almiron technically is more of a pushed forward guy. But
he's
still
a midfielder, especially in the 3-5-2, because he's coming deep. You've got two mm-hmm. strikers high, so Almiron is absolutely playing center midfield right now.
So when you have those three guys, Larenowicz, and look, I'm not saying that Atlanta United doesn't need a six, because you still need to go out and get a six. Larenowicz is not going to be able to play every game.
Mm-hmm.
But you look at the way that those guys are playing right now, especially Darlington Nagby. I mean, I keep saying this. The past two games,
he has
low-key been Atlanta United's best player. And I know that Almiron has been more effective in the goals. And our man Rob from Dirty South Soccer always has these funny tweets about Nagby where he's like, but he's not scoring goals, so he's not good. You know,
right.
he's trolling. But at the same time, it's like, it's a great point. Just because he's not scoring goals, I mean, if you – it's almost like, what was that documentary they made on Zidane a few years ago where
becoming
the camera was on him the whole game? You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
I would want to see one of those of Darlington Nagby, because of everything that he does, his positioning, his dribbling, his distribution, the stat where he's over 90% on passes into the final third.
Yeah, that's incredible.
That's
right?
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
So, I mean, he is low-key been Atlanta United's best player over the past couple of games. And it's funny because the beginning of the season – it wasn't exactly sure how he was going to fit into the squad, but he's fitting like a glove right now.
The thing I loved about Nagby is how often did you see, if you want to see what he brings to this team, like every facet of his game that he brings to Atlanta United, just rewatch this game, because the way he was able to basically get himself out of trouble, work the ball into space, and then move the ball forward was something we didn't really have in Carmona last year.
Mm-hmm.
Carmona was much more defensive-minded, and he didn't provide that – not that he couldn't do it, not that he didn't do it, but it's more in Nagby's skill set to, you know, recover the ball, get the ball out of trouble, and move it in space
mm-hmm.
where you're going to be able to get it to your teammates, move up the field, and start something going forward.
Well, look, he's going to score. You know, it's not that he's.
I'm not even worried about that.
Well,
honestly.
No, I'm not either. But a lot of people are like, well, he's not scoring goals. It's like, he's going to score. He's going to score really nice goals from outside the 18-yard box. I mean, that's what he does. He has those, you know, rockets that he can unleash.
Yeah.
It's just that when that's what you do, you're not going to score those all the time. And right now, his role is specifically the link up. You know, he's going from the midfield, taking the ball from guys like Larenowitz or even the back three, and pushing it forward to your Amidones, to your Joseph Martinez. That's his job. His job isn't to score goals all the time, because we have guys that can do that.
I think people are kind of holding him to the same standards he was held to in Portland, where he was asked to shoulder a lot more of the attacking load.
Well, his role wasn't as well defined, I don't think, in Portland. He has a much more defined role.
Exactly. He was playing wide there. He was playing the number 10 position a little bit. He was playing deeper at times. But here, and this thing we talked about right when he came here, in response to those exact same criticisms people had of Darlington Nagbe, was the things you're criticizing him for are the things that he's not going to be asked to do in Atlanta.
Right.
He's not going to be asked to create in the final third. He's not going to be asked to score goals. He's not going to be asked to take guys on and beat them 1v1. He can do those things, but what he's being asked to do in Atlanta is what we already know he's good at, completing passes and the consistency of getting up and down, covering ground, ball recoveries like you mentioned, Sam. These are things that we already knew he was good at. He's not being asked to shoulder the load going forward because you have other guys that can do that, and I think that's why he fits like a glove, as you said, Sam. And this match, I'm not sure what Siggy Schmid was thinking, rolling out a 4-4-2 with two strikers that aren't going to come defend, and it was basically 4v2 through the center. But Nagbe and company took complete advantage, and that's why you see Nagbe and Larentowicz completing over 90% of their passes in this match.
Siggy was probably thinking, hey, man, where's the closest taco truck, man? I'm hungry.
Did you notice what the difference was once that 30-minute mark hit and then LA Galaxy were finally able to at least kind of take control
the
game?
So I did, and here's what
I noticed it happened, but I rewatched it today, and I meant to actually find what that that shift was, and I never really found it.
So when I watched it, and I watched it back through, I thought that we just dominated them so much the first 30 minutes with that advantage in the midfield that we were just go, that we just ran ourselves into the ground and
you
got
mean the
tired.
Midfield we don't have?
Yeah, right, our terrible midfield, that's right. But We looked tired because it was just so dominant, and like you guys said, we just couldn't find that second goal. So when we got tired and had to soak up the pressure, it was a little more nerve-wracking being a one-goal lead.
And this happened last year. And honestly, that's what I thought had happened, because I was like, Ziggy didn't make a lineup switch or a formation shift or anything like that. He didn't really do anything. He just basically let his players play. Not very well, but they played.
Yeah.
I just kept thinking, this happened last year. And that's why I got worried going into the second half or after that 30-minute mark hit, because as soon as LA Galaxy got into possession, we had already – it's almost as if we had used up our allotment of chances for that game.
Exactly. No,
and it was, we were done. And so that reminded me a lot of last year. I will say, as a team, this year, Atlanta United looks a lot – the force that is going into Mercedes-Benz Stadium to play Atlanta United looks a lot like what Toronto was last year.
Absolutely.
A full team that's capable of really going the distance.
All the way down to the kind of three in the back with two wingbacks bombing forward.
Exactly.
So many similarities.
We spoke about Almirón and we spoke about Nagbe and what he does for Atlanta United. What he does for Almirón by him just alone. How he opens him up and allows him to play much more dynamically, much more going forward. He doesn't have to worry about tracking back as much. Not that he doesn't, but he doesn't have to worry about it as much. He's able to find himself in space. How often, and I think the success for Almirón in this game was a combination of both what Barco provided for Almirón and what Nagbe did. And it wasn't anything that they were providing special service to Almirón or anything. It's just the attention they drew. And what Barco demands defenders do for to cover him, and that opens up Almirón in the middle of the field to allow him to do all sorts of things. And that's what opened him up for what ended up being the eventual goal, the shot that goes off the crossbar.
Absolutely,
it's Nagbe being basically a nuisance in the midfield, Barco occupying space on that left side, and then Almirón being free to do what he wants.
Well, here's the thing, though. Like, with Nagbe, it's like, okay, where did Tata Martino coach? What was that big club in Spain he coached at? Barcelona.
Ah, yes, that's right.
What has been the main reason for Barcelona's success? It's because they've built a team around Leo Messi that feeds to his strengths. So that seems like Nagby's come in, and he's allowing Almirón to play to his strengths. So Tata obviously knows what he's doing. It's like, okay, how do I make my best player better? By getting a player to come in, take some of the responsibility off of him that is not necessarily attacking and going right at goal. And that has allowed, like you said, Almirón to play much more free.
Definitely one of the things I think that is good to see as a fan is when you see, this we were a good side last year, but the weaknesses were there, and it's clear that the exact weaknesses were pinpointed and players were signed to kind of fill those weaknesses. And you guys talk about Nagbe.
I think Escobar and Nagbe in particular.
Yeah.
It's almost like, and we haven't really even talked about Barco yet, but it's almost like Barco is just like icing on the cake.
Well, I think actually in a lot of ways, Barco does a lot of the things that Nagbe does in the final third, opening things up for Miguel Almiron. And I'll, another self-plug for me, you can read my article on Dirty South Soccer tomorrow about Ezequiel Barco and his style and what he brings to the game. And what fascinates me about him is that he's a player that's able to slow the ball down in the final third without losing it and pick out the incisive pass. And that's something that makes it a lot more difficult to park the bus against Atlanta United. And that's something that we've talked about all the time, that Atlanta United struggles against a defense that bunkers and sits back. And the reason is you have players in Almiron, Martinez, Villalba, even to some extent Gressel, who are very direct players. They want to run at you. When they get in the final third, they want to put that ball in the box, combine quickly, get a shot on goal, take on a defender 1v1, what have you. Make a play right away. We saw Ezequiel Barco on multiple occasions get the ball in the final third and just kind of hold it and probe and look for the right ball. And we saw it with the first goal when he switches that ball to Gressel.
Patience.
That's the big one. Yeah. He switches that ball to Gressel on the first goal, doing exactly that. Just having the ability to just sit on the ball when the defense is at its tightest in the final third makes it very hard to defend a team when you have a player like Almiron who can come from behind Barco, or Martinez already in front of them, try to make a through run in behind, and all of a sudden the defenders have to keep an eye on Ezequiel Barco, who can play that incisive ball at any second, and then you've also got these pacey guys running off of him. And that's also how the penalty was drawn for Joseph Martinez, who unfortunately misses. But it comes from Barco just sitting on the ball probing, Almiron making a run past him in behind, and the defense not trailing it. So I think Barco, in the final third, does a lot of the same things for Almiron and those around him that Nagbe does in the middle third.
And see, that you would have thought at least that Assad would have provided that sort of similar kind of service, but the difference is that Assad didn't require you as a defender he didn't require the attention of multiple defenders. It's almost like David Villa last week when he's dribbling literally across the box, the edge of the box, how every defender was seemingly just glued to him.
On the Alexander Ringel,
right,
where he lays it off
just
to
glued to him. That's the exact same kind of effect that Barco is going to have on defenders, which is going to, again, make everything easier for Almiron, for Martinez. I can't wait to see what this team looks like with Villalba in the lineup.
Amazing.
I'm not saying Gressel is, you know, he should be benched or anything like that, but you gotta see what it looks like with Villalba in up top.
It's amazing how Barco brings...
Not up top, but you know what I mean.
It's an up top kind of free role that Barco is being deployed in. And what was great about that was we got a great idea of the exact type of player he is when he was in that position. Because in that position, Tata Martino in the free role kind of striker position, he's saying, do you. You know, just play your game. And so we got to see exactly what Ezequiel Barco's game was. And I think a lot of people might have been surprised that his game is much more about passing than it is about dribbling and even scoring goals. I mean, he's the guy who's going to set the table for those guys around him. And he did it very well after his one match.
And here's the question Josh Eisenberg brings up, and it's one that I kind of disagree with right now based off – he doesn't bring up the question. He mentioned the 4-2-3-1, which I know we were going to go to next, and what Barco's role was going to be with Atlanta United, and in what formation would that role consist of? I really don't think Atlanta United is leaving the 3-5-2.
Don't mess with it, man.
I really
it's working
don't.
Not, so well
not anytime
right
soon.
Now.
No.
Because if you move it to a 4-2-3-1, the only way I see that working and it being at its most dominant is if you're okay putting Miggy out on the left and putting Barco as that center attacking mid.
Right.
I don't think it works to the to fulfill the best potential out of everyone on the field at the time.
But I think you can have that to where if you do that, you can have, you know, Almiron and Barco maybe floating around and switching spot. You know what I mean? Like, you can have those two guys kind of interchanging.
Yeah, that's what will happen. And probably when we at some point go back to the 4-2-3-1, you'll see some fluidity there. But I totally agree with you, Eric. And it's not just those guys. I mean, Julian Gressel and Greg Garza are now as wingbacks doing what they're comfortable doing, obviously, decent defensively.
I don't think Gressel is good enough defensively to play a right back in a 4-2-3-1.
And the thing is, we certainly don't know. Maybe he'll have a chance to prove himself there, but when you're not getting scored on and you've got a chance to put him forward, why change it? And the other thing it does, we kind of mentioned this earlier, is you can with the two up front and you maintain three through the center, right? So you don't lose your advantage in the center of midfield. And then you have a player in that free role in Barco who can just, I mean, it was basically a 3-6-1 at times. I mean, he was coming way back into the midfield. So you really don't have an issue like the Galaxy had where you have two guys just sitting up top. You have Martinez up there poaching and Barco's just allowed to drift, or it could be Almiron, it could be Tito, allowed to drift around and kind of play to their strengths. And that's really what Tata Martino wants from his players, to be creative and express themselves. And to me, there's no question this is the formation that currently enables them to do that.
Now, we've only seen Barco in this formation once.
Yeah, I know. We're
so
really,
so
I know.
For all we know, Tata could be in the dungeon, you know, figuring out the best way to implement his starting, his players in the best starting 11 that he can think of. And that might be the 4-2-3-1. I'm not ruling that out completely.
It's a long season. We'll see.
Right.
Yeah.
And you know what? I think that when it comes to the whole Gressel, Tito, whoever you want to, basically, in trying to get the best 11 on the field, I think that will in some way work itself out.
Sure.
Either.
As it is right now with Tito having the hamstring issue.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's a and I mentioned this before, but it's a problem that is seen all the time in baseball with having too many good arms. Inevitably someone goes down or someone isn't pitching all that well or whatever. That tends to work itself out.
Sure.
Tata, I think, again, these are champagne problems. Tata will find a way to figure this out.
He's kicking his feet up, man. This is awesome.
This is easy for him.
Mm-hmm. I love champagne.
I can't imagine him having a better time coaching than he's having right now in Atlanta.
Oh, yeah.
Let's talk about defensively how Atlanta United were specifically able, or the job that Atlanta United did specifically containing Zlatan and Kamara. You saw in different moments where McCann got the best of Zlatan, or there was another instance where you saw Perez kind of body Zlatan off the ball right in front of goal to save something. I think it was early. No, that was... I'm trying to think. That was early in the second
half. I remember
the
play. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You saw moments where, I'm trying to think who else, where Parkhurst was able to, get Zlatan kind of a little disjointed. I don't think they did anything all that special. They just marked him like a regular player, which was refreshing because it suddenly turned the narrative from it's not Zlatan versus Atlanta. It's Atlanta, let's dominate the hell out of LA Galaxy as a team and takes Zlatan out of it, which I loved. I loved that entire mindset that it seemed to be. I love that Tata Martino said that this is the best game they've played on the road, which I completely agree with.
So
I've never seen this team play better than it's playing right now. Obviously, it's a very, very short history, but the point remains. Last year, it was mentioned earlier, I think Josh Eisenberg on the Facebook Live mentioned how we had a fantastic defensive mindset in the second half of the season. We gave up the second fewest goals against or something like that. I forget what the stat was. But you never felt super confident.
I'm willing to bet, and I know you hate using expected goals, Eric, but
sure.
I'm willing to bet that it's much our average expected goals conceded is much lower than it was during that stretch at the end of the second half of last season because we're not even really conceding a lot of opportunities.
No, but it was always that confidence level if a team was in the final third. I never was fully confident like I am now.
Right.
Where with Perez, with Parkhurst, and with whoever's playing alongside
I mean, it's been McCann
him.
So far.
Right.
That's how you
and
know
he's
it's good.
He's been solid. I think people are giving him a little too much credit for this game. I thought
he
was fine.
Well, he made one really bad error.
I thought he was fine, but I thought that he got beat really easy on a number of occasions. And the one header that went...
When he headed it back across the face of
who,
goal.
Yeah, exactly. That was awful.
Yeah.
I think that...
Escobar's probably your third once he gets healthy.
And I mean, he's fine for now, but... I'm just hoping he doesn't cost us anything big going forward.
Sure.
And it's super early in the season, so I'm not all that worried about it, which is why I'm totally fine with him getting playing time. That way, at the very least, he can work at that position. But I thought he got a little too much credit for what actually took place on the field. Parkhurst and Perez, I thought were fantastic. Let me go turn the lights on.
Yeah, very, very good. And again, Eric, I think, hit the nail on the head. There was nothing particularly special done for this match other than hold your positional discipline. And again, it shows the type of game planning. I really don't think Atlanta United spend a lot of time focusing on opposition players. It's much more so about, as I mentioned earlier, us controlling the game and us controlling the tempo. And when we do that, Zlatan Ibrahimovic ain't getting on the ball.
Yeah.
Simple as that. He's not coming back into midfield to get it. You have to have other players around him get into dangerous areas and provide service for him, and that is not going to happen if you're spending so much time in possession, you're winning the ball back constantly, other teams playing two through the in the center of midfield, things like that. I mean, it was definitely a match where the way we played effectively defended those two strikers. It was certainly not anything special that we did.
By the way, how badly should Zlatan feel about getting absolutely abused by Chris McCann?
When he made him fall over?
Oh, my gosh.
That's like, a hilarious.
That's one where, like, look, I think I tweeted this earlier this week. I was like, because Atlanta United featured him on, what, Techers Tuesday? You know,
yeah,
when they do that thing.
Yeah, like, yeah.
I never, ever, ever, ever thought in a million years that Chris McCann would be the feature tweet on a Techers Tuesday. Yeah. But here we are. 2018 is a weird year, guys.
You know, you have those interactive like photo frames where they, you know, you interactively just scrolls through a bunch of pictures. Mm-hmm. I really hope that at some point in his life they do like a, you know, a, what's that show? The MTV Cribs show where they're going through his house and you just see a GIF of that just on replay inside of a photo frame, like next to his bed or something. That'd be fantastic. Wouldn't you? If you took
if I'm Chris McCann and I'm a guy who has played in like the championship. And MLS.
And lower than the championship. He's been in League One, League Two.
Right, yeah, that's what I'm saying.
I don't know that he's a championship player.
Yeah, but, well, even then. I'm
that's
like,
not very nice.
And you did that to one of the greatest strikers we've ever seen?
Yeah.
Wow.
You know, it's hilarious more than anything. Zlatan is not the most fleet of foot at this point in his career either, but Chris McCann did make Zlatan Ibrahimovic fall down.
Oh, so. I did like Zlatan's quote about wanting to, the way that he wanted to overhaul U.S. soccer. From earlier this week.
Yes.
which was?
Well, basically he offered, or he said if he was single, he could, I'm trying to think of a delicate way to put this.
I think procreate. You could
spread
his
seed.
Yes. He wanted to implant his seed into as many, if he were single, into as many American women as possible. Yeah. Then he could just have the entire U.S. starting 11.
And those kids can afford pay to play, so it's perfect.
That's
you know, it's
right.
actually going to work
Absolutely,
yes. Did you guys hear after the game Zlatan said, We came out disorganized.
Yeah,
I thought that was very interesting. And I keep going back to Siggy Schmidt, who's on the hot seat now. But you basically allowed a 2v4 disadvantage in the midfield, and you played two strikers against three center backs.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it was just really, really bizarre.
But did you see there was a chart out there where you just saw that it looked like the game was just pumping a bunch of crosses.
Yeah, you showed me that before we went on. Yeah,
it looked like they took a very simplistic approach to playing Atlanta United in the sense that, oh, well, they're not very tall in the back. Let's see if we can't get a bunch of headers to Zlatan.
You know, Minnesota did that too. They were just lumping. That's, again, Eric, you meant it's so great to see. That's something that we struggled with last year is just lumping balls in the box, and it just takes one mistake or a bad bounce for you to concede. And I watched those last 15 minutes of the first half that we were talking about earlier, Eric, and I was like, if I know this team over the last year and change, we're going to concede here, and we didn't. And the same thing happened in the last 10 minutes as well of the match. So again, you're seeing Atlanta being able to deal with this kind of style of play of just lumping crosses into the box against a team that doesn't have a huge hulking presence in the middle.
Right. Now, I think one thing too, you can see this as a striker gets more and more frustrated, like with Joseph against NYCFC, for example. You know, mm-hmm. he was getting very frustrated at that. Constant long balls over the top and him chasing it down. I think Zlatan is looking at the team around him right now and he's kind of like, this isn't really what I signed up for.
Because he's not even going to chase. he's not going to go. You kick it over his head.
This is what I assume the research Zlatan did on LA Galaxy, Wikipedia. Oh, they've won the most MLS Cups. They must be really, really good without actually like researching into the team who he was going to. So certainly it's going to be a long road for him there, I think. But I'll say this, too. You think one thing he could have been thinking while kind of standing on the field during this game is, maybe I should have gone to that team. You know what I mean?
Yeah, seriously.
Here's the thing. I don't think we would have taken him.
He doesn't fit the style.
As high profile as he is, as good as he's supposed to be, really, where does he fit on this team?
I also don't think he cares about.
I mean, maybe as a change, he would be like an off the bench. He'd be a great off the bench type. But yeah, he'd be more of a change of pace guy.
He's a Swedish guy who joined a team with a Swiss cheese for a backline.
Well, he's here to do commercials. Yeah, right. He's here to try and extend his brand. I think that's what's more important to him right now than any sort of challenging for trophies or anything at LA. At least that's what it seems like.
It's going to take them some time to. I heard Jason Longshore say this several times on Soccer Down Here, and I think he's absolutely right. Zlatan makes the equation more complicated for the LA Galaxy because you already went and got Ola Kamara on the offseason from Columbus in the Giassi's artist trade. And you can't really play both of them together as we saw in this game. And you've got a guy in Zlatan who has to have service. He's not going to check. He's just not that type of player anymore.
Well, honestly, more effective.
I saw toward the later parts of the game where it looks like Zlatan was trying to play that number 10 role. He dropped
back into the midfield and was
trying to kind of create himself. It's almost as if he was like, all right, Ziggy, I'm going to take over.
I couldn't believe my eyes. I mean, yeah.
Because he was taking corners. Basically, everything that it looks like they had built up to in terms of playing Atlanta United, an entire tactical game plan to face Atlanta United went out the window, and Zlatan just tried to take everything over.
Well, I mean, he recognized that he was not the guy to come back into the midfield, but he recognized what Ziggy Schmidt didn't, which is that we're getting overloaded through the center. But I couldn't believe my eyes when I saw Zlatan coming back and trying to make plays from deep. I mean, when you see that happen, you know you're doing well as a defense.
We talked about the first goal, Martinez. Well, it was initially a shot from Almiron that hit the post. It goes back to, I think, Barco.
Yeah, Barco switches
to Gressel.
Oh, what Gressel a strike by Gressel.
First of all, that hadn't gone in, I'd gone nuts.
Yeah.
It's a beautiful
How awesome.
Hit.
God, he hit it so
How
well.
How awesome would that goal have been?
Yeah.
Gets knocked off the crossbar, ends up at Martinez's feet, and he obviously knocks it in.
Who, in typical striker fashion, takes all the credit for the goal,
absolutely.
Even though he just missed
nothing.
A penalty and did nothing. Yeah.
First of all, it won't really show it in the numbers, but I thought he had a really good game. At one point, we saw him defending in the box, in his own box. He tracked back all the way to Guzan's 18 to defend. Defend Zlatan.
Do you guys think Tata got in his ear over the week? I mean, we talk about how it's kind of annoying when people talk about his work rate, but he looked body language-wise a little more pep in his step.
It wasn't the work rate for me. It was the body language. Mm-hmm. It was the... And look, I know he was frustrated because I said this earlier against NYCFC, just constant long balls that he's having to chase over the top, which... It seems very anti-Atlanta United. It seems lazy. You know what I mean? It seems like that. And that's what that game dictated because NYCFC, newsflash, very good team. But I think that in a game like that, you saw – and like you said, I think Tata probably did get in his ears like, hey, you know, don't let any of this get to you. But, you know
– It's a bad look.
Well,
you know?
It's a bad look. And you are a leader on this team. We need you to act like it a little more. Not you don't have to change anything about the way you're playing. Just maybe give a little bit more effort and show the rest of the guys that you're not that, you know, what did I say, prima donna, you know, striker-ish attitude. Right.
Did you guys? Well,
and he's not lazy. Anybody that's saying he's that's incorrect.
Here's what I think really happened. You saw what happened pregame, right? Cosmo with the picture of Martinez with the rose
the
in the mouth.
The famous rose photo.
Honestly, that's what set him off.
Well,
like,
we need
done.
To just put
I'm
that
and you know
by the locker room.
You know it was Latan's idea, and so when he came down to the 18, Guzan's 18, to actually defend Zlatan, and he actually tried to knock him off the ball. Like, he was actually trying to do work on Zlatan. Mm-hmm.
Right.
I think he won that one moment against Zlatan.
Oh, sure.
And then, obviously, I just think his whole game was, I want payback for this picture right here. Well, he had to walk by it. There's a picture of Martinez walking by the
that
picture
was fantastic,
right
there.
With that stupid mascot,
yeah.
That was the only thing the Galaxy, I guess they prepared... They didn't prepare properly for that either because it set him off, right?
Really
at the
not.
Time, I was like, that's a great troll. But, you know, Joseph came out with a fire under him. And, you know, I think whatever it was, whether Tata said something to him or, you know, it was the photo or whatever, he took something to heart from what happened last weekend. And certainly we saw a new side of him. I do think it will be a constant issue kind of reining him back throughout the season. It's just an enigmatic number nine. You know, this kind of comes with the territory with these guys, but it is nice to see that he does have some sort of recognition, even though it's not a huge deal, but he does have some recognition of how his body language and work rate can improve in certain areas.
Do you guys remember the other occasion where something like this happened where we saw a substantial change in body language or in a player's attitude or anything like that?
One thing I remember is Almiron starting to shoot last season, where everyone was like, you need to start shooting, and he was never shooting,
and then he started shooting.
Saw him score a couple bangers.
So I don't think that was anything to do with Tata or anyone saying anything. I think Assad. Assad last year, at the beginning of the year, flopping as often as he did, or taking fouls and being super overdramatic about
him. Oh, yeah, he stopped, yeah.
It was after the knock to the head.
When he took
concussion.
The red?
That's right.
I think that was it. Was that the same game?
There was the concussion and Portland, quote-unquote concussion in Portland, and then he got the red card in Toronto.
No, the concussion was... I thought the was that
wasn't
Portland,
in Portland
was that,
where he just kind of fell like a
I
like
think
a
that's
twig.
Right.
That
yeah.
wasn't Portland, yeah.
Yeah, but yeah, you're right. I mean, he kind of cleaned his act up.
Anyways,
after that.
it was right around there where it suddenly he didn't do that anymore.
Yeah,
and I thought Tata had gotten someone had gotten into his ear, and I think maybe this that had something similar has happened to Martinez when it comes to him looking lazy or anything like that. I don't think he gives any.
No.
I don't think he cares at all what anyone thinks about him, the way he plays. Because, again, he's one of the most prolific scorers in MLS history right now.
Already.
And he's only barely just a little over a year in, right?
Mm-hmm. Does he get that fifth hat trick this weekend?
Honestly, if you're the most prolific scorer in MLS at the moment, who cares what anyone thinks? Keep doing what you're doing.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing. You're not here to impress anyone. You're here to do a job and that's score goals. And, I mean, you will impress people in the process. Yeah. But, you know, it's not his job to, you know, have elephant ears and adjust his game based on what fans are saying. You know, just keep doing what you do, man.
Speaking of flopping, there was a lot of complaints about Almiron flopping during this game. I guess a lot of LA Galaxy fans thought that it was very overdramatic and that he looked like what did I hear? Basically look like you've been shot, which you hear all the time from everyone that doesn't like soccer. Here's the thing. If you're not going to go into a game and try to draw fouls as a midfielder, then what are you doing?
Well,
that's all Almiron was doing.
Flopping isn't just a thing of soccer. You know, it happens in basketball. It happens across sports. So, like, if that's the thing. If you think that it can get you an advantage or something, you're going to do it. I'm not saying that you should be overly dramatic about it, but it happens. So people that freak out about it, it's like, I mean, Zlatan has done it. You know, Kamara's done it. All the guys for LA Galaxy at some point in their career have done it. So Giovanni Dos Santos has done it a lot. So
I really don't understand the complaints when it's not your player from your team doing it, when it's the opposition doing it. You understand that your team does the same thing. It's just common knowledge. Mm-hmm. I don't understand why you'd complain. Now, if you think it's
I don't like blatant diving.
Well, there's simulation.
Is a different story. Simulation is a different story. I understand that argument.
But if there's contact,
in no way, shape, or form did Almiron at any point dive. He might have sold the foul a little bit, which is fine because in every sport you see that happen.
Yeah. Yeah, I think my take on diving has always been the same. You know, first of all, if you get all worked up about it, just you're wasting your time. It's not going away. These guys are trying to win. They're going to try to get any advantage they can. But secondly, I'd say about 90% of quote-unquote dives are fouls.
Yeah.
And the player exaggerating the contact. And I would also, particularly for people maybe that are new to the game, for a player like Miguel Almiron that's going a million miles an hour with the ball at his feet, it only takes a little tiny touch to knock him off balance and either send him to the ground or affect his move forward. So there's no reason for him to try to stay up. Well, sometimes there might be. It's all contextual. But for the most part, there's no reason for him to try to stay up when he's been knocked off balance and might lose possession, and he might not get the call if he doesn't go down. And a lot of the time, even though it's minor contact, there's nothing he can do about going to the ground because he's going so fast already. You know, and I think people, just a little clip to the heels is all it takes when you're going full speed to send you to the deck. That's all it takes.
I really don't care. I like Almiron.
I don't. Yeah, whatever. Go.
Keep doing what you're doing.
Go win the foul. You know, we don't want to see. You know, with Assad, I think Eric, you talked about him earlier. We saw some blatant simulation from him last year.
Like, he was
untouched. You know, stuff like that, and that actually can hurt the team because first of all, you can get a yellow, and secondly, you're probably just going to give the ball away,
right,
and the other team's going on the counter.
It bothered me because when Assad did it, he was doing it in moments where it wasn't really beneficial to the team.
Right.
He'd do it like in his own third,
exactly,
where it clearly wasn't a foul. If you're going to do it in the final third where you can at least put your team in a dangerous position.
Exactly.
I'm convinced that someone got into his ear. I'm convinced.
Maybe so.
Anything else in regards to this game? That we missed?
No, I mean, I think we hit it all. I thought we were so good. And if we had finished, we would be talking about that as one of the best performances this team has ever put in.
That's the only thing right now, which is crazy to me because of how good of an attacking side Atlanta United is. It's just the finishing wasn't there.
Mm-hmm. But even without that finishing, the fact that they still held on, they still were defensively strong.
Right, exactly.
That they kept LA Galaxy off
gritty
the score sheet.
Gritty, yeah.
It was almost the best of both worlds if you can have it because you expected them to score. You didn't give up points because you didn't finish.
Mm-hmm.
And that was sort of a problem last year, especially in the middle of the season where you didn't have Martinez. You weren't finishing on in moments that you should be finishing on, and you were giving up points because of that.
Yeah, 100%.
That's what happened in the middle of during that Martinez absence. That's what was happening. And that's what upset me more than anything because you had all these opportunities and you weren't taking advantage of them. Last night, or Saturday, you had the opportunities. You missed them. You were just off. In almost every instance, you were just off by just a little bit. Something was off about the pass or about the shot, and you didn't let it really impact the outcome in terms of the 3 points. and you did it on the road.
Exactly.
And you did it on the West Coast.
I think that sums it
and
up brilliantly.
10:30 at night. And you had everyone talking about Zlatan, and Joseph had his little picture up there.
It's a beautiful evening on the West Coast.
Yeah, even somebody on our comment section said, hey, Compton was actually pretty nice. I don't know what part of Compton you were at, Chief, but
Compton was nice. Laton's dropping into the midfield. Who knows what's going
on
over there?
What is going on
here?
Yeah. Yeah, it was good. Should we move on to Montreal?
Montreal, yeah.
Montreal taking the 5-3 loss against LAFC. I honestly have no idea how you go up. It was 3-0 in the
It was 3-1
going into before LA got LAFC went on their 4-goal tear.
That was a shambles of a game.
It was,
yeah, it really was.
When you look at games that are high scoring, you don't look at that one and think, "Oh, that was awesome." That was bad.
Well, just go watch the goals. I mean, it's
that
like,
was bad. If you're one that's opting for, I've heard guys on this radio station 680 The Fan talk about how what they would really love to see is the goal get expanded. About 5 feet wider, 5 feet taller.
Yeah.
They want more goals, more action. And a game like that proves you don't necessarily want more goals
Would have been 12-10.
It is the prettiest thing in the world.
Would have turned into a college baseball game. The crazy thing about Montreal is and they really struggle defensively. You can go back and watch the goals from that game because I was thinking, 5-3. LA rattle off, 4 consecutive goals. Surely they were playing brilliantly the way they played in Salt Lake and the way we've seen them play a lot of times throughout the season, but it turned out a lot of the goals were just missed assignments from Montreal. I think they conceded 2 goals from set pieces. And this is a team in Montreal that plays 5 across the back. Yeah. I mean, they basically play the defensive version of Atlanta United's formation. Just imagine if Gressel and Garza were instructed to stay back and play more of a proper left and right back position. Then you go 3 through the middle and 2 up top. So it's more of a 5-3-2 than a 3-5-2. So this is a defensive version of Atlanta United's formation, and you compare the way they handled constant balls into the box against LAFC to the way we did against the Galaxy, and you just see the gap in the quality of defense between the two teams.
There were certain parts of that game, that match, Montreal-LAFC, where you thought it was middle school defending in the box.
Well, we were watching the condensed highlights, and it was like...
It was bad.
There was like a chance every 5 minutes. I mean, just from long balls, and I know Montreal were down a man, but it wasn't like they were being picked apart or anything like that. It was just missed assignments. There was one, Eric, where I can't remember who the defender was, but he whiffs on a clearance, and the LA player is able to play it back to the PK spot for a free shot on goal. I mean, it was really shambolic. And, I mean, we need to come out and score 3-4 goals this weekend, guys. I mean, obviously the finishing boots need to be on, but you got to think the chances are going to be there. There are a bunch of statistics that go in our way. Montreal has conceded the most penalty kicks this season. We've won the most penalty kicks this season. They've given up a ton of goals.
So if you predict a penalty kick, you wouldn't be that far off.
Yeah, right. Yeah, this is definitely the game match to do it. And I mean, they're going to try to do similar to what LA Galaxy did. They're going to play 2 up top. They're going to try to lump the balls forward on the counter. It'll be a little different because they'll have 3 through the center. But I think if we handle, again, similar to what we did in LA, control the tempo of this match, there's no way with their lack of defending, even with 5 back there, that they can keep us off the board.
Oh, absolutely. And I think one thing, too, with Atlanta United is, you know, you're going to be playing at home. So
yeah, those chances, you'd think those chances go in that didn't go in against LA.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And that's the thing. I think that this is a game, too, where as we watched those condensed highlights of Montreal, whew, that is a team that definitely, if they didn't have Nacho Piatti, ooh, I don't know where they would be.
They're completely relying on him.
Yeah, no, and I was going to say, that's really all they have. Everything is going to kind of flow through him when it comes to anything in the final third for Montreal. And I just don't understand how – I don't see how playing 5 in the back and basically surrendering in the midfield, how they even plan on attacking this game. Because they're just – you're not against Atlanta United. Maybe against LAFC it would have worked, assuming you – because, look, a couple of the goals that LAFC gave up, one was an own goal. The other one was terrible goalkeeping by Evan Bush. He had moments where he was a fantastic goalkeeper, and then –
the goals that Montreal gave up.
What did I say?
LAFC.
Oh, Montreal, yeah. there were moments where Evan Bush looked fantastic, and there was others where he didn't look great.
Well, I was just about to bring that up with Bush.
The last goal he gets, he concedes is the one that goes through his legs that ends up at the feet of Blessing.
Yeah.
There was another one. What was the other one I was thinking of? I don't know. Maybe just managing five in the back, that maybe it's hard for Evan Bush.
But I feel like other
it's
than...
It's obviously just hard for the team in general.
I feel like other than that one goal, though, where it went through his legs, I mean, he made a ridiculous top-handed save. I mean, he's a guy who I think you might need to worry about, but at the same time, I mean, if you pepper a keeper with shots, eventually some are going to go in. So I kind of think that's what's going to happen this weekend, just because Montreal, if Atlanta, kind of like what they did with Zlatan, although the difference between Piatti and Zlatan is Piatti, I feel like, could probably do more.
Yes, yes.
Outside of help from the rest of his teammates than Zlatan can.
Absolutely, but it's incredible how reliant they are on him. And Sam, you mentioned being able to do things on his own. Nacho Piatti is averaging 5.5 completed dribbles per match. That's like a ridiculous number, but it shows how reliant they are on him to create attack. I mean, he has to go 1v1 and beat someone for them to be able to create anything. Lee also leading the team in assists, goals, key passes. I know they've got the Vargas kid up top, the 20-year-old, who's an exciting young player, but clearly any success in attack that Montreal has is going to go through Nacho Piatti. And I think when you look at, again, you can look at how the team handled the two Galaxy strikers, and you already kind of have a formula for success against two strikers who are different types of players this weekend, but again, the movement, positional discipline is going to be what's required. And I just don't see how Montreal wins this match. I just don't.
You're challenging the Dread God right now, but I think you and I are far less fearful of the Dread God than Eric is. I'm with you. I think 4-0, 5-1 is
a
realistic scoreline.
To take out some of those frustrations when you know you have been playing well, but it hasn't, even though you're getting results, hasn't completely clicked, I think. You know, we haven't had that kind of, we had the LAFC match, but we want to go score 3, 4, 5 goals, particularly at home against teams like this.
We need
this
like
every
a game
week.
Against like against the Revolution last year.
It's crazy to say we're not
stadium,
firing
you know?
All cylinders.
But here's the thing: I think we are. It's just
Just finish.
I feel like Barco is the NOS.
Yeah,
that's it. That's the difference. Barco is the NOS that we're adding. You know, the aftermarket NOS that we're adding after we've already bought the car.
This segment brought to you by Fast and Furious number 25.
I'm just saying, that's all it is, because we were fine in clicking on all cylinders before Barco, and now you add Barco, and he's just going to make this team much more exciting, much more enjoyable to watch. He's going to make make players easier to. I mean, honestly, he makes everything much more fluid,
more versatile going forward. Yeah,
much more dangerous. Whatever adjective you want to use, it's. He makes his team so much better, and he's only been playing for 100 or
played a little over 100 minutes, probably. Yeah, his influence on the match in LA was undeniable. I mean, that's the first match with three in the back that you win the possession battle. I think that's solely because of him coming all over the field to come get the ball. And again, it's not better or worse. It's just different than what you see from an Almiron or a Villalba. And when you have players that can go a million miles an hour at you, like those two I just mentioned, or a player like Barco who can kind of slow it down, that is really hard to defend, and especially for a defense in Montreal that's already pretty bad. So, to me, this is a defense, whether they park the bus or not, that we should be able to unlock.
Now, the one way they can defeat us is just through the counter.
That's what it's going to be.
Through their attempt at counterattacking. Mm-hmm. That's really the only play you got.
I agree.
If you're starting five in the back, that's really the only play you got, because you're not going to be able to control the midfield with guys like Nagby, Almiron. And really the way that Parkhurst is playing, the way that LGP is playing, McCann really is the weakest. I don't understand why anyone just doesn't focus their attention on trying to destroy McCann.
Because
he's the weak link in all of this.
Of the three, he's done well. Three, but
I was
going to
say, but
one.
He has played a lot better.
But the fact that the LA Galaxy did not really seem to focus on trying to beat him, because normally you'll see a coach, if there's a weaker side, if there's a defender that isn't as strong or is maybe younger than the rest, you'll see them focus their attention on attacking that one side. Mm-hmm. You didn't really see that against LA Galaxy. I don't understand why you wouldn't against Atlanta United.
You might see it more this weekend, and I think the reason is the two up top are so different individually than Kamara and Ibrahimovic. Piatti and Vargas as well are players that can run at you and dribble at you. So I think we're going to have to see more 1v1 defending from those back three than we did against the Galaxy, where it was more so just intercepting, cutting off balls into the box.
Do you guys think it's a trap game, considering
I've heard that term thrown a lot?
And that's the only reason I bring it up, because I've heard it so much already.
Yeah.
No. Well, that's the thing. I think it's too early in the season for that. Like, I don't think you have trap games this early. You know what I mean? Like you're still in beginning of the season pretty fully focused mode. I think once you start to pepper in midweek games and things like that, you can have that. But I think right now, I mean, when you have full weeks to prepare for games, I just don't buy into that concept of that being a thing this early in the season. And I just think that Atlanta United are I don't want to, you know, tempt the dread god like
the best team in the league right now.
Well, not even that. Like they're that. So much better than Montreal. Like it's not even close. So that's why I just think it's impossible to be a trap
this year, because the Montreal team we're looking at right now is the Montreal team we're going to get for the rest of the season.
Well, no, I'm just saying at this specific moment right now that Atlanta's miles ahead.
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying. You're not seeing in MLS play. You're not seeing Giovinco play much right now. You're not seeing Bradley play much right now. I forget what the starting lineup was for.
Oh, you mean Toronto is going to be a
Toronto?
Different, yeah. Okay, not Montreal.
Are you talking about Montreal?
What were you talking about?
I was talking about Toronto. I thought you were talking about.
When were you talking about Toronto?
I don't know. Maybe I'm just.
He was talking about Montreal. You were talking about Toronto.
I had CCL. CCL on the brain right now.
I was going to say, when the hell did we switch to Toronto?
My bad.
what?
So let's just go predictions.
I'll say this. First of all, I really want Nagby to score in this game so it'll shut people up about, well, Nagby's not that good. It's like, dude,
I want names. Who's asking him to score?
Oh, I mean, it's just one of these things where you're constantly seeing, I think, in comment sections and I think in things like that, you know, you're the people that are, I guess, the loudest detractors. It's like,
someone explain why Nagby needs to score.
Well, I'm not saying he needs to.
Anyone that's listening who happens to be one of those commenters on the cesspool that is Atlanta United FC fans or whatever it is on Facebook, just explain to me why Nagby needs to score.
Another thing, though, I promise you,
you're gonna find goals somewhere everywhere else.
I would like for him to score just to shut that section up. But I'll say this:
but you see, if he scores one, they're gonna expect him to score more.
Well, of course,
and he doesn't need to score any. If he scores zero goals the rest of the season, that's perfectly fine.
As long as he's playing the way he's playing, absolutely. But I'll say 4-1 this weekend. That's probably. I mean, I think it could be worse, but I think Atlanta United will play very fluid in the attack. I think you're going to probably get a moment of brilliance from Nacho Piatti, because it always seems like you get a moment of brilliance from him. So, yeah, I'll say 4-1.
I mean, Ezequiel Barco has made me not afraid of the dread god. So I am going to, you know, dread god be damned. I'm not afraid of you anymore.
Is it because he looks both 15 and 50 years old?
He looks both 15 and 50, yes, which is very kind of deity-like already.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah. No, I don't see us running into these types of kind of trap games this season that we did last year, because there's just so much more talent and solidity there. I was going to say 4-1 like Sam, but I don't want to copy him, so I'll go 5-1.
Jeez. I don't really know. Like, I could go 3-0. That sound good?
That sounds good, fine. Too.
3-0, we get goals from...
I mean, if you're scared.
We get the first one from Barco at home. That'd be a nice little way to welcome him into Mercedes-Benz. He's already played Mercedes-Benz, but you know what I mean.
Yeah, but he has a little cameo.
Like a start.
We're going to really see the best of him, I think.
For sure.
Do you think Villalba plays? Because I saw him practicing a little bit. I'm wondering if he gets another week.
I mean, it just depends. Like, if you're up, you know, 3-0, 4-1,
I haven't really heard anything. I've been so busy, I don't know if I've been paying full attention on how he's doing and what his timeline is. So.
Maybe off the bench, but there's certainly no reason to rush him, because we're playing just fine without him. And his time, he will be needed, obviously, this season. So why rush him at this early point when you're playing so well without him?
I also still want to see Almiron get a goal in the run of play. I think that.
Yeah, he's only got. Does he only have the one against DC?
The one, yeah. Uh-huh. The last three have been PKs, and he seems like he really needs.
So you want a rocket?
Really wants
you want
that?
Like a
it doesn't need to be a rocket. I think it's inevitably going to be a rocket because of how he plays, where he plays, where he finds himself with the ball on the field. But I think that I just want him to score. I don't know if there's a monkey on his back, but. It just seems the way he shoots, the way he kind of commands the ball. Someone called him selfish. And I don't know so much about selfish. I think he just wants to score.
Yeah.
And you obviously want that out of a guy like Almiron, a guy like Martinez, a guy like Tito.
You want your attacking players to score goals.
And he hasn't been scoring in the run of play. And I think he just really wants that moment, that feeling that, you know, not that he thinks he's lost it, but at some point in every player's, you know, a career, they get to a point where it's a lull. It's like if you have a sales job and you're not selling, you know, am I good at this? even if you are fantastic at what you do, sometimes you still have those thoughts.
Right.
And I'm not saying he's going through that, but it seems like he really wants to score from the run of play. I want him to have that moment. Any final thoughts? The parlay kits. What did you guys think of the parlay kits?
I mean, they were great until they started falling apart.
Yeah, is that the only one? So what were they made? Were they made out of pieces of earth or something? What was so special about these kits?
No, they were made out of, because it's for the oceans, they were made out of like plastic bottles and such that had basically been like pulled out of the ocean.
Right. Well, I thought it was a little bit ironic that a couple of them started falling apart during the match, but they looked brilliant. And our fans are insane lining up at, what was it, 5, 6 a.m.? Was it at the team store where that happened, or was it
at Mercedes-Benz? I mean, they didn't open until 10, and at 5 a.m. there were people standing in line.
Hey, good on y'all. I mean, that kind of craziness is what makes our fan base so great.
That's why Atlanta United is so awesome, and then the support that they get is so awesome because fans show up at Mercedes-Benz Stadium at 5 a.m. to get a jersey.
They're better fans than I am because I'm not.
Nah, I'm not doing that.
Oh, I do have one more thing to say, about it. And we don't really have time to get into it. But Fox, do better, man.
Yeah.
Like if y'all haven't heard.
Well, explain the backstory.
Well, if y'all haven't heard with the World Cup coverage, they're only sending two broadcast teams over there.
Oh, two teams.
Broadcast teams.
Okay.
They're sending two broadcast teams over there. The rest of the people will call games from the broom closet, basically, in Los Angeles. And it's funny because Derek Ray, who is one of my favorite play-by-play men of all time, you know, he's going to be one of the guys in the broom closet calling a game. And it's like, well, at least he's used to doing that with Tommy Smith from the Champions League games back in, like, what? Like the early 2000s?
Yeah, I mean, I feel bad for him more than anything. I mean,
he deserves better. He deserves much better.
What's the time difference between L.A. and Russia?
Probably
seven, 8 hours. Well, Russia's so big.
More. Because it's like 6 hours from here to, like, England.
It's 5 hours from here to England, 6 hours from here to, like, continental Europe.
So you're talking, like, eight, nine, ten hours.
Well, it's such a huge country.
No, because there's a difference between what
I didn't even think about that.
The times that the three of us are going to watch it, and the time that they're actually going to have to be up.
Well, they're 3 hours
game,
behind. Yeah.
Holy. I'm wondering what that time difference actually is between L.A. and Russia. Or where these games are going to be held, because obviously it can be held in different places.
Enough to reverse all of those sleep schedules for all of those folks.
Like the entire month, they're going to be like, oh, I hate this line.
I'll say, though, that this decision really pissed me off. I mean, it's a slap in the face to the fans.
What's Fox
because,
being Fox?
And it's such
let's be real here.
It's such a step back to the coverage we saw 15, 20 years ago before ESPN kind of figured it out with their coverage of Euro and World Cup, that you got to have people there. You got to get vibe.
I mean, how amazing of a job did ESPN do in 2014?
And that's what's frustrating.
You know what I mean?
It felt like they had kind of just figured it out, and then Fox outbids them and for whatever reason decides to take the coverage back 20 years and keep people in a studio.
We know the reason.
Because it's Fox.
No, we know the reason. Because the United States isn't in the World Cup.
So is it to save money because the U.S. isn't going? That might be. But again, doing that for an event like the World Cup is just an insult. They don't deserve that tournament.
They don't. No, they paid the most money for it. Yeah. I agree with you. They don't. Because this is the network that put, on the first time they had the Champions League final, they had Kurt Menefee, the Sunday NFL host guy, hosting the Champions League pregame. And then they had Michael Strahan explaining the difference between football and football. This is the network that we're stuck with for the next three World Cups, basically.
Look, I agree with the frustration.
We're mad,
you're
Eric.
Saying give them a chance.
But
right?
This is a good business decision.
Sure.
This is a great business decision, especially if you know the interest won't be there. And yet, I think they're wrong about the level of interest that will be there.
Oh, it's going to be there.
But if they think that because the United States isn't in the World Cup, the level of interest isn't there, then this is a good business decision. Oh my
right.
gosh, I can't talk.
And it is.
But you, again, I think they're wrong. But I would probably do the same thing. If I'm one that is trying to save money in a situation where I'm inevitably going to lose money. Or I think I'm going to lose money.
But they're not going to lose money.
Well, and I also think it's a slap in the face to the fans of the game that you're not taking it as seriously as a lot of people think you should be by not sending.
I mean, I think
teams.
The
well, but,
one.
But just think about it. These games are likely going to be what, early morning.
Yeah, you're probably looking at like kind of 7, 8, 9, 10, late kickoff, maybe.
I don't think they're going to. I mean, I haven't seen this yet, but are they going to build like an actual desk and have like a studio like ESPN's had in the past few World Cups?
I'm sure they'll have a. It'll be similar to the Champions League coverage.
But are they going to be in LA doing it?
But you're just,
yes, that's listen, right. Yeah.
That's horrible.
You're just not going to have the viewership you think you would have unless the United States was in the World Cup.
I don't disagree, but I just think that there are. I mean, any network across the world could save money by not sending. Their whole team there.
And Telemundo is sending like a full thing. Yeah. That's the thing. That's Telemundo.
Well, because Mexico's in it.
I mean I'm sure like, Netherlands is not in the World Cup. I'm sure the Netherlands ESPN is sending people there. I mean, this is the tournament where I think you maybe sacrifice a little bit of the business decision for the event that it is.
I'm not disagreeing with you. As a fan, I understand your point completely. I would love to see the full spectrum of commentators, of analysts, of you know, I want them to build the desk right there, the studio right there on the field.
Commitment. It shows commitment to the sport and trying to get the sport more popular.
Do you guys think, okay, so let's say everything's the same, but ESPN has the World Cup. U.S. doesn't make it.
Oh, they're
still ESPN
going balls
sending
to the
people?
Wall, though. Yeah, they're
I think
still
ESPN
going all
is
out.
Sending
Absolutely.
People.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Even now, without the World Cup?
That's my question.
No, if they had the World Cup, would they?
Yeah, they have the World Cup, but U.S. is not in it.
This
do they make the same decision Fox does?
This is such an ESPN versus Fox thing. Like,
but
that's
ESPN, I think, globally is more.
Sure, that's
a
good
bigger
point.
Brand.
That's a good
exactly.
point.
Exactly. And
but Fox and Sky Sports are the same brand. They're owned by the same people. So, I mean, it's the same thing.
You're talking about pretty much two specific places on the planet. ESPN is much more global than either of those two.
That's true. Well, I mean, I'm not saying
Sky Sports or Fox they're not global because they obviously are. But
right.
when you think of
ESPN is one solid brand. It's
right.
not split off
into
other names.
Right. Everyone knows where that channel is. Yeah. Everyone knows how to find it, how to access it. If you're going online, it's very easy. I'm not saying Fox isn't easy. I'm just saying it's much more recognizable. It's right. easier to follow.
One last thing on this. How much do you think it killed Alexi Lalas on the inside to do those commercials about, like, you
Mexico?
Know, the Mexico World
Your
Cup?
Home for El Tri. You can see him cringe when he says
I mean,
that
that's
line.
That's what I'm saying. Like, it had to, like, gut him
I did
inside.
I did,
it.
I did enjoy that.
That
because, you know, Fox is just cringing having to push 100%. The Mexican national
well,
team
that's
because
how they're
the U.S.
Get numbers,
is not there.
That's how they're going to make
Absolutely.
Money. I mean,
and
like
they,
he said, it's a business decision, yeah. and I get it. But, I mean, having Alexi Lalas, a guy who, you know, went head-to-head with Mexico about as much. I mean, the only thing that would have been worse is if it had been Landon Donovan saying that. You know, the guy that took a leak on the Azteca
right,
field.
Right,
you know?
Right, all right, before we wrap up, any final thoughts?
I think we're good.
Okay, cool. Quote of the night from the Facebook Live feed. I think we might start doing this if we get good quotes like this. Matt Pog, sorry if I mispronounced that. Almirón, Joseph, Barco, Gressel, Nagby all need to score more. We'd be better if they score more. Hashtag I know soccer. That's the kind of stuff I see on Atlanta United Facebook fans.
There is some hilarious.
And the Dirty South Soccer comments section
yeah.
too.
All right, yeah. that is it. That'll do it for us, for everyone listening and watching. Oh, patreon.com/MOTS podcast if you want to donate to the podcast. We don't have Kelly anymore, so she's not going to be sending out stickers. We're still kind of figuring out exactly how we're going to do that. But if you want a sticker and haven't received one, send us an email. We're going to get a new list going. That way we know who we've hit and who we haven't hit. If you already have one, if you want one, just go ahead and send us an email as well. We'll send you another.
And plus, I mean, you know, I walk around tailgates. Josh walks around tailgates. Yeah. Eric says he's going to. So
at some point.
We can come stick a bunch in our well, we can stick a bunch in our pockets.
Yeah,
and
I
if
usually
you want
have
some
stickers.
Just let us know.
If you want one, give us a shout on the email. You can find us on Twitter at MOTS Podcast. Tell your friends. Find me at Eric G. Quintana. Where can they find you?
You can find me at JoshB914.
Sam?
At Sam J. Franco.
Follow all the Atlanta United news and notes, DirtySouthSoccer.com, at DirtySouthSoc on Twitter. You can find them on Facebook, Dirty South Soccer, again on Facebook. And am I forgetting to plug anything else?
I was just going to say one more thing. I'm very lucky this weekend. I will be in the AMG Club, so if any of you listening are there, come holler at your boy.
I'm not as pretentious as he is.
Oh, wow.
I didn't feel like that was pretentious. I was trying to be
more
the opposite
pretentious
of
than
pretentious.
Eric.
I was trying to be approachable.
What? See, that's your opposite of pretentious. I'm in the club seats this time. You know, just
look, I'm approachable.
Look, I don't write for the
just approach me.
I don't write for the Athletic, okay?
All right, that'll do it for us. Until next time. See you later, Atlanta.